This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Earthworm Foundation was formerly known as the Forest Trust and has 20 years of experience in finding solutions to the major social and environmental problems that our world is facing today. And I find out more about the foundation and the work that they do from Bastien Sachet. He is the CEO of the Earthworm Foundation, and Kwek Karl Yen, who is the regional lead of the foundation. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Very good.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, so just so everyone knows, Bastien is joining us all the way from Switzerland over on Skype, and we've got Karl here in the studio. So yeah, we do apologize if there's any sort of issues with the sound quality. But I just want to say, I really love that, you know, you have chosen the humble earthworm as your, I suppose, can we call it emblem or spirit animal? Before we get into that, I mean, tell me a little bit about the Forest Trust. I understand when the organization first started out, your mission was to protect forests. Maybe you can help me out with that, Bastien.
The story of the Forest Trust starts very, very long ago in Australia. It's a young boy who had the idea of the Forest Trust, Scott Poynton, the founder. And in 1999, he finally started to make his dream a reality and created the Tropical Forest Trust at the time, which then became the Forest Trust. And he started with a very solution, practically driven mind to say, let's use the leverage and the forces of the market to transform how things are done upstream, but not in a punitive way, but in a solutions-driven way. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started back in 1999.
Okay, and tell me about that change to the Earthworm Foundation. Why did that happen?
So after 1999, we've worked a lot in the timber and wood supply chains. So we helped the garden furniture industry, the flooring industry transform to use more responsibly sourced materials. And as a consequence, we worked a lot in the forest, initially in Asia, in Cambodia, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, but then later in Africa and then in South America. Sure. So we had when I joined in 2006, we were an organization of about 50 people with a lot of people, boots on the ground, working in the forests and improving practices there. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, working in factories in Vietnam, in Indonesia, but also in Brazil and other places of the world, where we would set up traceability systems and improve the way the whole chain works. Mm-hmm. But then we quickly realized that we would not save forests or protect forests if we didn't work with agriculture.
Okay.
Palm oil, soybean, every commodity, cocoa, that has an influence on forest or that grows basically in tropical landscapes. Mm-hmm. So we started to work on those value chains. And, you know, progressively and where we stand today is we realized that at the really the essence of finding the balance between people, businesses, nature is really around how we do farming, how we use our land. Mm-hmm. And because we've always been working at the roots of supply chain, and we like the image of the earthworm, his determination, his humility, we thought it's time for us to become who we are, rather than explaining always who we are not. We used to go in farms, and people would say, "Hey, you're TFT. Why do you work in farming? Why do you work with palm oil?" And for us, becoming earthworm is really to be in tune with that spirit and with who we really are.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was reading an article that you actually wrote, Bastien, last year. I think it was in the Medium that, you know, you guys sit in between two worlds. So you're between the world of the activist NGOs and between the world of businesses, you know. And I guess that to a lot of people that puts you as fence sitters, maybe.
Yes. I mean, fence sitters has this negative connotation. Mm. For me, I believe, and, you know, for those who know the earthworm, it's an animal that goes between the surface and the depth, between the organic matter and the mineral matter, and creates life, humus, from that mix, basically. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it's about mixing worlds and different views to find that balance. And I think it starts in a family, but it works in a company, it works in a society. You don't do anything if you don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
And when you talk to each other, you achieve peace, you achieve well-being, you achieve health. And so the idea for us of the earthworm is really to continue to cultivate that health, despite sometimes, you know, we have an example at the moment in the field of palm oil. You know, the Europeans and Malaysia, Indonesia are really fighting over,
yes,
over what to do with the commodity. And you think, guys, you need to talk to each other. You've got more to win by working together that rather than building fences. And so I really like the idea of no fence, in the sense that we facilitate that exchange, and from that we can find solutions. We do it at community level with, you know, in rural areas between companies and communities. We get them to talk together, or we get it between big brands such as Nestle or Mars and their counterparts in the NGO side, the Greenpeaces, etc. We really push them to work together.
Okay, all right. And, you know, just going on that, you know, palm oil, I assume that is an area that you're working on a lot in Malaysia. Maybe, Carl, you can tell me about, you know, Earthworm Foundation and specifically the work that you do in this region, in Malaysia in particular.
The work in palm oil really started in 2010, when at that point of time, TFT worked together with Nestle to pull together the first no deforestation, no exploitation policy. Mm-hmm. So that was in 2010, and we really got going in 2011, and that's when I joined also as well. Mm-hmm. So those early years, we spent a lot of time talking to procurement teams and really mapping out supply chains, where the oil came from, so we could associate or tell a story that oils from Sabah perhaps went to the American market. So we basically brought a new form of conversation that procurement managers would have with their suppliers. Traditionally, it was on price points, on quality. But then in those beginning years, we asked questions about the origins of the oil. Mm. Which were the companies that produced the oil? And were they, you know, perhaps associated with risks like deforestation or social exploitation or anything like that? So at the very early years, that's what we did, you know, just going down the ground, having many conversations with many different suppliers, understanding, you know, risks, you know, in different regions. And over time, we started to form a very good understanding, and we could differentiate, you know, what the campaigning NGOs were saying, you know, if there was deforestation or if orangutans were being killed. We had a good idea of how these problems persist in certain regions, how frequent they were. Mm-hmm. And basically that informed the transformation strategy which we are basically right now involved in.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going? I mean, how are you engaging with all the different stakeholders? Like Bastian said, you know, there's almost like a little mini war going on at the moment. I mean, I know the Malaysian ministers have said that the EU is not even listening to them, for example. You know, they're not even waiting to hear our case or anything like that. I mean, how do you work with all of these different sort of stakeholders?
To be honest, it has been quite challenging, and it's still quite challenging.
I can imagine.
But if we looked at it since 2010, you know, when the first Nestle no deforestation, no peat, no exploitation policy came into play, things have really, I think, progressed from there. You know, another landmark milestone was when Wilma, the world's biggest trader for palm oil, signed up to the same policy in 2013. And after that, you know, you got a big number of Malaysian companies also signing up for the NDPE policies. Mm. So today, we got more than 60% of the refining capacity in Malaysia having an NDPE policy. That's pretty significant. I think if you look in Southeast Asia, that number is about 74%. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much your big companies like the Siam Darbys, the KLKs, the Wilmas, Cargills, all having no deforestation, no peat, and no exploitation policies.
Yeah.
So from the business side, I think it has moved. What it means is that the commitment is there. What we've seen differently in these years is that these companies that have these commitments have made the effort to reach out to their suppliers and bring that transformation not just within their own operations, but also to their external third-party suppliers.
Mm-hmm. I think, Bastian, you said it before that, you know, you don't believe we can have any sort of sustainability without traceability.
Yes, that is true. And that was the start of our work, finding out where the raw materials come from, who is associated to the production, so that we can talk and see how improvements or betterments can be brought and how we can work together with the actors of this industry. Mm-hmm. So it's essential for us. Traceability is not an end for us. It's a means to reach out to the people who are involved in the production. Mm-hmm. But to come back to your point about about what's happening at the moment in palm oil, I really think that there is an issue of perceptions on both sides.
Yeah.
The Europeans have a negative perception of palm oil, which is fueled by all sorts of propaganda and lobbying, but also also what they see, overall in Asia around deforestation and which has been happening in Asia globally, but they don't make the difference between countries. They just accuse palm oil. And on the other side, I think the Malaysians have also a perception that there is a lot of prejudice from the Europeans.
Yeah.
And so everyone is working on perceptions. What we are trying to bring to the debate is a bit of facts. And I think what we need to have is not their facts versus, it's not the their versus us facts. It's having facts that are out there for everyone and can be verifiable by anyone. So we're working with, for example, satellite imagery. We've done a lot of work with Airbus and to bring transparency about what's happening. Is there really deforestation? Can we look at how much, what are we talking about really? Because everyone is accusing each other, but can we bring facts? And I think we're encouraging really the Malaysian businesses, but also government, to bring facts on the table and bring those facts transparently to the world. For Malaysia, what are we talking about and how much and where, etc., and what is being done to address it? I think there's been a lot of progress, and the key is to avoid falling into perceptions, but rather showing facts. So that's something we are trying to push across the industry.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like telling people that you can't really sell claims that you're perfect, but at least, show that you are transparent in all your efforts.
That's exactly it. For us, we've always pushed companies to react to accusations, but it is valid for governments as well. React to accusations or prejudice by showing who you really are and showing what your intentions are, and use transparency and facts to do that, because it's very convincing. It proves you're genuinely and honestly willing to strive for the same objective. And to be honest, I don't think Malaysia and Europe are disagreeing on the need to stabilize our climate, on the need to preserve biodiversity. I think there is alignment, but we need to bring those facts on the table, make sure that we manage to align at that level. Unfortunately, I think when we go down to a specific commodity, there is a lot of lobbying on both sides that I think brings some noise to what really matters. So that's our perception in the current state.
I'm speaking today to Bastien Sachet. He's the CEO of the Earthworm Foundation, and Kwek Karl Yen. He is the regional lead of the Earthworm Foundation. And we're finding out more about the work that the foundation does. And we'll continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today on the show are Bastien Sachet. He is the CEO of Earthworm Foundation, and Kwek Karl Yen. He is the regional lead of Earthworm Foundation. And we're finding out more about the work that the organization does. So I do know that, as you mentioned earlier, Bastien, first it started out as a mission to protect forests, but it soon grew, and you've decided to, Earthworm Foundation's mission now has evolved to focus on 6 different areas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, totally. I think for us, clearly, we realize that ecosystems and ecosystem balance is a matter of many various components, from soils to crops to forests,
mm-hmm.
Even oceans, and a matter of people. And among them, the rural communities and the farmers and the workers who are involved in the supply chain. So our areas of focus are along those lines, and you'll find these themes on our website and well into each part of our work. In Malaysia, and I will let Karl comment more on that, but in Malaysia, we've worked a lot and deep with smallholders, in particular in Sabah and in Peninsula Malaysia, to see how we can actually find the solutions for some big environmental problems. And for example, we've discovered human elephant conflicts between planters and the fauna,
mm-hmm.
and we've been working with lots of partners and local NGOs, scientists to find a solution. But we did it because we had the opportunity to go deep with our smallholders program, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cultivate that, and we are firm believers that it's by looking at that we can create a positive impact. At the same time, we're looking at soils globally, soils is a huge issue. The soil's fertility, and this is something that we are very, of course, as Earthworm, keen to look at. And we've got various projects in the world to make sure we can sustain agricultural production in the years to come and with the growing populations.
So maybe Carl, you can then expand on what Bastien was saying about working on human rights issues and things like that. Especially, I think it's within workers' rights, and I'm guessing that's what it's got to do with.
Yes, that's right. So from the many assessments that we've done in the beginning years, I think we've chosen to focus and narrow down into three large social issues, which is forced and bonded labour, ethical recruitment, and then also children in plantations. Right. So we have these three programs that are being run currently. So for example, we're doing a study on costs of migration. And also we want to basically highlight good practices on video for employee retention, because that's a hot topic today. The industry is grappling with a labour shortage. And what we've encountered when we went on the ground is that some of these companies rely on not so good practices to try to keep their workers around. Passport retention, for example. So the mode of which we want to tackle this is to make the companies really understand that, you know, there's better ways to retain your workers, and that's not just keeping the passports. So today we have a couple of videos with highlighting several local companies carrying out the exercise of returning their foreign workers' passports. We have also made available resources on how companies can do so. So that's freely available online on our Tools for Transformation website. If for any company, palm oil related or not, that have foreign workers, can go onto that website and find resources to basically guide them through the entire process.
Right.
So I think for forced and bonded labour, that's something that we're doing. Ethical recruitment, we're also working with several partner organisations to figure out a bit more. We're doing labour supply chains. And eventually, we would like to create a due diligence tool which companies can use to evaluate the agents that they use to bring migrant labour in.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's not much clarity on that. And as a company relying on migrant labour, they do need a bit more guidance on how to do things better. So that's something that we're working on. So another topic that we're working on is children in plantations. So children in plantations is a big one, because if we look towards East Malaysia, Sabah and Sarawak, we've chosen to work in Sabah. For the field visits that we've gone to, we've always seen children in the estates and in the plantations, in the mills, not necessarily working, but we do know it's sort of a recipe where, you know, sometimes the risk of child labour could be, you know, quite prevalent. Hence, you know, we started this program, Children in Plantations, and we basically started out gathering the stakeholders into one room. So we gathered government representatives, companies, civil societies, and experts into the room to actually talk about that problem. And from there, we published that report that came out in 2017. And following that report, we are working on building trial risk assessment frameworks of which companies could use to evaluate, you know, if they have an issue on their site. We're also building a directory for social services of which, you know, the companies that have children on sites could rely on. So in the future, we're also hoping to develop a directory of social services for vulnerable children, and promoting also birth registration and access to education, which is a key deterrent to child labour.
And how do you actually convince these companies to address these issues? You know, they're difficult issues, you know, they're easy to overlook, you know, because there's a lack of, I suppose, accountability, or, you know, there's hardly any enforcement perhaps, right? So how do you actually get them on board to, you know, to talk about these things with you, to actually address these issues?
It does take some time to get them to open up. But I think our approach is always one that is non-threatening. when we go down to our ground for an assessment or a visit, it helps that the team, our team consists of people that were formerly part of that industry also.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So we definitely can relate to what they're going through. And when we talk about these things, it's not necessarily that they are at fault. But it's just the situation that we are all in, and we're here to help. And I think if we persist in that approach, you know, eventually the ice will be broken. And we, at the end of the day, there are very good people in the field, and they just need an environment of which their ideas also can come forth. Mm-hmm. And we have seen those people. It takes shape in, you know, we have seen these people in smallholders, small estates, big plantations. And it's just a matter of really just inspiring them again.
I would add, you know, we have faith in the human being. I think it sounds a bit philosophical, but it's important. We have faith in the human being and his ability to do good and to improve and to change in the right way. So we always come, as Carl said, with an open hand to find solutions. There are people who refuse, who don't want to do anything, and these ones, we can't do anything with them. Mm-hmm. But we will focus our work with the pioneers, the ones who want to lead. And I think these ones are going to help their industry, they're going to help their communities, they're going to help their country, actually, because they are opening new ways and innovating. Mm-hmm. And putting their companies, but inspiring others to do things differently. And that's a lot how we work, is we work with the ones who really want to be the best or to transform. And then these serve as an example and an inspiration for others. And so the replication is not by constraint or by imposing new norms or new certifications, as you often see in the environmental world. No. The way we do it is really with an open hand and working and creating solutions that work in a very pragmatic way with those who want to do it. Mm-hmm. And then they replicate by themselves. If they are creating value for everyone, they will replicate by themselves very quickly, actually.
So that's great. So would you say that, you know, from some of your success stories, other companies have seen that and then taken that on board as well? They've, you know, there's like a growing interest in, you know, doing the right thing, like, essentially, you know, doing, you know, being sustainable, you know, addressing not just issues of deforestation, for example, but also human rights abuses and things like that.
As long as it creates economic value, mm-hmm. Yes. So we always focus on finding that very sweet spot between economic value, social and environmental value at the same time. Yeah. It cannot be one or the other, because eventually if it's that, someone's losing out and someone's not part of the success, and therefore the success doesn't spread. So if you take the passport story and the passport retention story, I think it's been really interesting. We started with a company of about 250 employees. They returned passports to about 90 workers. Mm-hmm. And now we can count about 30,000, you know, passports that have been returned within the industry and beyond the industry. Actually, it's very interesting to see other industries have seen the videos Carl just mentioned and are using the same things to return passports to workers in factories or hygiene factories, sectors we've never touched and people we've never talked to. We just heard afterwards that they used that video tool and those tools to return passports. So the chain reaction of change that happens is actually very true. And what we're trying to do for other matters is to really harness that mechanism, which to do that, you actually have to go really deep into the reality of the ground to really understand, you know, what's the reality of a planter? Mm-hmm. What's the reality of a smallholder in that area or a mill in that area? Yep. And that's only by doing this that we are able to find solutions with them, solutions that work for everyone.
I mean, what are some of the roadblocks that the foundation has, you know, kind of helped companies address?
Carl, I'll let you complete, but typically setting up a policy on how you improve your environmental and social quality. That's more on the company side, setting up traceability, opening up in a transparent way how you do things and sharing with your clients and NGOs how you're doing. But then more concretely, it's been around these, in Malaysia, these passport retention issues. In other countries, it's been about getting, you know, indigenous communities' rights recognized by businesses or agribusinesses so that they can coexist without negating, you know, each other's rights. Mm-hmm. or solving conflicts. Of course, it's been about trying to find what's the definition of forest and how do we play with, you know, deforestation. Everyone talks about it, but what is it really? From degraded forest to very dense forest, we need to have a tool that allows to measure that. And that's a tool we've created with a so-called high carbon stock approach, which is something that's widely recognized by the industry and by NGOs. Mm-hmm. These are a few examples that allows us to move forward. We are working on the definition of what's a healthy soil. so that it can be used by everyone going forward. There are many other examples, but I won't name them all here.
Carl, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
I think in the past, Earthworm Foundation so played a unique role in trying to get different stakeholders in the room mm-hmm. to have a conversation. Back in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, we did that. You know, we brought GAR, Greenpeace into the room, and we basically thrashed out what no deforestation looked like. Mm-hmm. And out came from it was the high carbon stock approach. So I think we have this ability to convene and basically translate and catalyze those discussions that naturally results in, you know, good solutions mm-hmm. coming up.
Okay. And I mean, who are the people that you are currently working with? Who would you like to work with? You know, I'm sure you're constantly looking for collaborators to, you know, keep this work going.
Well, with regards to our projects here in Malaysia, we're looking for collaborators that would like to work with us in our programs of children in plantations, ethical recruitment, forced labour, mm-hmm. also with the smallholders in Sabah. We are constantly on the lookout. Yeah, also with the government. We've been actually stepping up our engagements with government recently, basically sharing our ideas. That's what we've been doing with them.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Bastian, you know, in the global sense, you know, who are you looking to work with? Who are you working with? And I mean, what are your hopes actually for Earthworm Foundation moving forward?
Basically, I would say a few key categories. The first category is of course, the brands and the companies that handle raw materials. We believe they are, and you know, they are the source of what we consume, how we dress. And so eventually, when you harness those markets and those value chains, you have the possibility to address the big issues around climate, biodiversity that are associated with their production. Mm-hmm. And most companies realize that this is at the roots of their supply chains, that the biggest positive impact could be found in terms of climate change, biodiversity, and human rights. So that's where we focus and where we want to continue to focus our work. The second type of partners we are looking for, of course, are the civil society and NGOs, as we work hand in hand with them to see the problems, identify them, and solve them together. I think they've been a lot used as, a voice that brings negativity in the space, and therefore they're not seen as constructive players. We don't think so. We think they bring facts from the ground, and we need to hear them and work with them to be able to use those facts to then find solutions. The third category, of course, is the investors and the philanthropists. We believe that they have a role to play in pioneering and investing in solutions that are a bit innovative mm-hmm. and that go sometimes a bit beyond the scope of the very value chain, which is dealt with by the corporate and companies. But when you look at the landscape, for example, the health of a landscape is depending on many factors. So the programs we have are also programs targeted at this community. And finally, of course, the government. Carl mentioned it. But because they set the framework and because they are such a strong voice in making things happen, potentially internationally and nationally, for us it's key to continue the engagement and have their ear to be able to bring our vision of things. The governments are always very close to lobbyists and are very influenced by people who want them to hear their voice. On our side, we'd like to bring a neutral voice and a global voice to some of the problems and the challenges they face.
Mm-hmm. No fences, in essence.
Exactly.
And, you know, for anyone listening, you know, if they'd like to get involved with the work that you do, I mean, how can we best, you know, get involved, you know, just anyone who's, yeah, just regular folk like you, like me?
It's funny you ask the question because we've had that question more and more. Even more now, we are called Earthworm. maybe because it's not an acronym. But we've got a section on the website where you can post your IDs, share IDs, etc., and get in touch, basically. We've got our social media as well, which are a place to engage and discuss. Mm-hmm. At this stage, this is how we mostly engage. We're not an organization that collects donations from individuals. We haven't opened that yet. But we are very... very open to ideas and partnerships and collaborations. So please get in touch via the various means that are available.
All right, so thank you so much. So I guess if anybody wants to get in touch, the best way to would be just to head to earthworm.org and everything is listed there, you know, all the work that you do. I guess how to get in touch with you also via social media and just all the different projects that you're working on, yeah?
Yes.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Bastien Sachet, he is the CEO, and Kwek Kalyan, he's the regional lead. They're both with the Earthworm Foundation, and we were finding out more about the work that they do. Again, the website to head to is earthworm.org. And if you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.